players gather to cast powerful spells, some of the oldest and most powerful in the history of Magic the Gathering. Entomb, Grief, Reanimate, and many others, battling head-to-head in brutal combat, they all have one thing in common: to uphold their legacy and the search for eternal glory.
The Eternal Glory podcast is brought to you by the minds behind Bosh and Roll on YouTube, Thraben University, and TheEpicStorm.com. This episode is sponsored by 3-for-1 Trading and Sparks Law Practice.
Hello, and welcome to episode 120 of the Eternal Glory podcast, Griefers Gonna Grief. We've already recorded 30 minutes of introductions and banter for the week, available in our supporter-exclusive pre-show. Check out patreon.com/eternalglory to gain access, or join as a YouTube member for the same content on YouTube instead. Today's pre-show is full of anime ladies in bikinis and a discussion of some sleeves and playmats.
We're negative, in case anyone's wondering. Yeah, you could go get that full conversation.
As always, I'm Phil Gallagher, aka Thraben U.
I am Brian Koval, aka Bosh and Roll.
And I am Brian Cook of the Epic Storm.
For those of you who want to check out that pre-show, you can join our new patrons and YouTube members since last episode, and buckle up because there's a lot of them. We've got Adria P, James H, Victor R, Richard G, Otto, Justin W, Scott B, Street Wraith, shout out to Street Wraith, Jackson P, Dimitri L, Harley P, Marcus E, Kafraz, Evelyn, Snussy, I hope that's your real name, and Josh L. Big list of new patrons. Shout out to all of you. That new episode, that last episode must have been a heater. Yeah. And you can find that at patreon.com/eternalglory or on YouTube. Join as a member.
And this episode is brought to you by Sparks Law, a business transactional law firm owned by Eternal Magic community member Jonathan Sparks. If you're an entrepreneur, business owner, or gig worker looking to start your own company, Sparks Law can help with partnership agreements, contract reviews, intellectual property protection, or any other business legal questions. If you want to shape your business strategy with a fellow Eternal Gamer, reach out via email to jsparks, that's J-S-P-A-R-K-S, at sparkslawpractice.com, or call 470-268-5234. This episode is also sponsored by 3-for-1 Trading, one of Europe's largest Magic the Gathering traders. Their online shop has a fantastic selection of high-end Magic cards, especially for vintage, legacy, and old-school players. You can find them at shop.3for1trading.com or visit their booth at major events. They run weekly sales, and new, individually scanned high-end cards are added every Wednesday. Use code ETERNALGLORY to get our community-exclusive offer of free worldwide shipping on your first order over $500 and experience their world-class customer service and exact grading for yourself.
And if you want to advertise to over 10,000 Eternal Gamers every single episode, reach out to us. We're always accepting new sponsors.
Let's set up this episode. And I think this episode's story starts last episode, where, for those of you who are just tuning in or need a reminder, last episode, just 2 weeks ago, we talked about how Legacy is stable and we should enjoy that. It's stable, it's healthy, the same kind of decks just take turns being at the top of the metagame every week or two, and a nice little undulating metagame of things you can do in the format. We were met with some pushback to that episode, primarily by people who are mad about Orcish Bowmasters. And we're going to start this episode by talking in depth about Orcish Bowmasters. We did talk about that card last episode, of course, talking about the health of Legacy. Naturally, that card would come up. But I know some folks felt strongly that we either hand-waved it, like it's fine, without actually discussing it, or they completely disagreed with the things we did say in a way that made them big mad. One person actually quit my Patreon. They were so mad about it. So we're going to spend some more time on Orcish Bowmaster before we get into the topic of grief, which is the main topic. Luckily, they are together in the deck that is currently annoying everybody.
I think one of the big divides with Orcish Bowmasters comes with how much Legacy you actually play. I feel that Orcish Bowmaster often preys on the people who have played a decent amount of Legacy in the past, but are not highly, highly enfranchised in the current Legacy format. If you don't have a lot of reps versus Orcish Bowmasters, that card is going to destroy you. Like, you're going to brainstorm wrong, you're going to ponder wrong, you're going to, you know, attempt an Ancestral with Lorien Revealed and then just get eaten alive by Orcish Bowmasters. but a lot of times the more experienced, like right now, players are just not putting themselves in the situations where they are going to receive those blowouts.
Phil, I will co-sign that. As someone who plays a ton of Legacy, and I talked about this a little bit in the pre-show, I played over 100 matches in 2 weeks prepping for SCGCon Philly. You have to imagine in those, 100 or so matches, I would have faced Orcish Bowmasters at least a couple times, as someone who plays this format. It was not a huge deal, and this is coming from the guy that runs 3 main deck copies of Echo of Aeons, 4 Brainstorms, 4 Ponders, Song of Creation. I draw cards. And I think if you're super invested, you find ways around Orcish Bowmasters, or you learn the play patterns to minimize it a little bit. But if you're someone who's playing this format once every 3 months and you're not familiar with how to play around the card, obviously it's going to hurt more. So if you want to not get blown out by Orcish Bowmasters, learn the best ways to beat it.
It feels a lot to me like Stifle of years past, where like the players who had never played by Stifle before just like completely walk into it and are like, oh, and like once you know it is a thing, there are times where you can actively play around it and mitigate its effective damage potential. And I feel like the same thing is very true for Bowmasters.
Yeah, and it's not just Stifle. Also, Daze, Wasteland. Like, how many new Legacy players just tap out for a spell and just get obliterated by Daze? Or they just like Tundra Go when they have Basic Island in their hand, then they get Wastelanded and they don't play that game. That happens all the time to players who are not playing around the things upon which the format is built. And I'm just going to co-sign the point of people with strong Legacy chops from a year or more ago. If you played a lot of Legacy in 2019 and you're stepping back in now, Orcish Bowmasters is going to feel like an absolute beating. How can anyone play with this going on? There is also just the massive overlap of those are primarily the people playing Legacy, where the people like us who run Legacy YouTube channels and stuff, obviously we are playing more Legacy than the average person who will show up to the monthly Winnow Duel at the LGS or every 6 months when SCGCon comes through your region and you can get there. Like those people without a Magic Online account, without an active card hoarder account, just trying new decks every day, those people are the ones who are going to feel it the most. If you don't know anything about Legacy and you're just losing to everything everyone plays, Orcish Bowmaster probably doesn't register specifically. It is very specifically those, that large band of people who just are actually probably pretty good at Legacy and have a lot of reps in their life, but maybe not in the last year.
At the SCGCon this past weekend, I played a Turn 1 Main Phase Brainstorm. And my opponent scoffed, they're like, Main Phase Brainstorm, huh? And I was like, yep. And then I didn't really say anything else. I just, played out the rest of my turn. They untap and they go Underground Sea, go. And I was just like, oh, the Bowmasters player didn't want me to Main Phase Brainstorm, huh? Like, it's just a little funny that you have to change your play patterns in order to beat the cards that are relevant. Like in 2019, like Brian said, could you imagine a Main Phase Brainstorm like that? It just wasn't a typical play pattern.
In addition to Bowmasters, like Lorien Revealed has often also changed like the Brainstorm heuristics, being able to like turn one Main Phase Brainstorm, turn two upkeep Lorien Revealed cycle, still get that shuffle has also been a way that has changed how we evaluate Brainstorm. But back on the topic of Orcish Bowmasters, I feel like Orcish Bowmasters is one of the most like skill testing cards we've seen printed in many years, because you have the option to play it out at sorcery speed to kind of always get the cantrip so your opponent can't Brainstorm in response. You have the option to hold it up to hope to get a Brainstorm or Ponder or whatever. But if your opponent then chooses to play around it and wait on a Brainstorm, do you flash it in at the end step to use your mana? Or are you willing to wait and not use 2 mana and like fall behind in terms of tempo and board state? Do you use Orcish Bowmasters for 1 additional damage and a slightly larger orc pre-combat and when it telegraphs that you have flash blockers, or do you wait? Like, it is an incredibly skill testing card with a very high skill ceiling.
Yeah, I'm going to use a recent practical example from SCGCon where I was playing Dimir Rescaminator versus Sultai Beanstalk. I left up 2 mana, hoping to, snag a Beanstalk on the way down, get some damage through and start clocking. And my opponent just made their land drop and passed back. At which point, we both have 2 mana up, we're both Bowmaster decks, and I'm a combo tempo deck that wants to be using its mana, and they are a tempo control deck that is okay sitting back and not spending mana if nothing's happening, because that eventually favors them. I felt behind. I didn't have another land to play. I know I couldn't cantrip into their open 2 mana, so I just drew for turn and passed back again. I didn't Bowmaster in the end step. I didn't do anything on my own turn. I just passed back, and I could feel the game slipping away from me. And then my opponent, who had less experience playing these play patterns, just flashed in their Bowmaster in the end step because they wanted to use their 2 mana. And then I played mine, killed theirs, and I was way ahead on a board state where if my opponent understood what this game was about and the macro levels of our deck and the fact that they play more lands than me, they play better removal than me, and if nothing's happening, it ultimately favors them, they would not have cast their card. They would have realized that my proactive tempo deck was not actually playing cards or making land drops, and that I was losing every time that happened. And that's like pretty intricate, pretty high level stuff. But also it's the difference between winning and losing your matches in a tournament, which is what we're ultimately talking about here.
I'd also like to point out that there's nothing stopping you from playing your cards. Orcish Bowmasters is not Lavinia. It's not Chalice of the Void or Trinisphere or Collector Oof. You can play your Ponders and Brainstorms. And I know that a lot of people that play Legacy because they want to play the Cantrip Cartel. They want to play Ponder, Brainstorm, and even sometimes Preordain or Mishra's Bauble. They want to play Daze and Wasteland and all that stuff. And they don't like it when there's a card that makes playing those cards less ideal. But the thing is, one damage, if you want to ponder, is not the end of the world. I've brainstormed into Orcish Bowmasters. It's something you're allowed to do. And I think that just because there's something that is now good against cantrips doesn't mean that you can't cast them. And I feel like some people that maybe don't play that often get a little caught up in the hype around Orcish Bowmasters, where like, oh, how am I supposed to play Brainstorm into a Bowmasters? Or am I not allowed to cast this due to Orcish Bowmasters? Like, just play your cards. There's ways around it if you play tight.
Something that I've really enjoyed is like winning the Orcish Bowmaster mirror, where a lot of times it's like intricate, like I'm going to play here, I'm going to play my Bowmaster at your end step so that you will Bowmaster my Bowmaster, and then I am going to kill your Bowmaster by reanimating my Bowmaster, and now I have the active Bowmaster on board. And I feel like there's a lot of like really cool leveling situations where if you know what is expected, you can set up good results for yourself.
Phil, that's actually a bad argument, or that's an argument that we received on the feedback of our last episode. Players didn't like that Bowmasters is the best answer to Bowmasters. They feel like that leads to unhealthy play patterns, and it's reminiscent of Mental Misstep. And Mental Misstep was truly toxic, and I can understand the comparison of toxic to Mental Misstep era. I don't think we're even close to that with Orcish Bowmasters. And there's nothing stopping all cantrips from being played, which is really what Mental Misstep did in that time period. If you go back and look, the Hive Mind deck played 0-1 drops in it. And that was, you know, a sign of how good the Misstep era was, or, well, Mental Misstep at least. We're not seeing that with Orcish Bowmasters, and there's still Swords to Plowshares, Prismatic Ending, Lightning Bolts. Like, there's other removal being played that is not Orcish Bowmasters.
Yeah, one really important difference that I want to highlight between Orcish Bowmaster and Mental Misstep. Honestly, the fact that the card with the same name as the card answers the card is the only thing they have in common, but Force of Willing someone's Force of Will is pretty common in this format too. That is, like, dazing someone's daze, wastelanding someone's land. Sometimes you even waste a wasteland to get that out of the way. It just seems like a comparison that's not actually based on the reality of the play pattern. Those of us who were playing back then, we remember like Goblin Guide, Misstep, Misstep your Misstep, Misstep your Misstep, Misstep your Misstep, Misstepping my Misstep, then Misstepping my Goblin Lackey. And it's like, oh, okay, now there's no permanence in play. We both have 3 cards in hand. Go. That sucks. That is very different. A 0-mana play where any number of them could happen in a turn based on how many each people had in their opening hand, and if someone decided to cast a 1-drop to jump it off, that is a very different thing than 2-mana up. It has to be black, and we can kind of predict and work around, because if you're holding up, if you're storing up Bowmasters for the inevitable Bowmaster fight and I cast Murktide Regent, you're dead. You just guessed wrong, or I found a wiggle room out of it. I have a 7/7 flyer now, and you have 2 or 3 Bowmasters and a reanimate in your hand. You are ready for that exchange Phil just described, but I'm doing something different now. You guessed wrong on what my 2-mana was representing. That is a completely different thing than Mental Misstep in my opening hand is just as good on turn 7, It's whenever they decide to cast their one drop, it's in the bank, and here I come. It's just a totally different thing.
Like Brian described, their mental misstep can be played on turn 0, 1, 2, whatever. Orcish Bowmasters requires 2 mana, and you have to agree by the rules of engagement of like, oh, I'm going to play my Brainstorm into their Orcish Bowmaster mana. You're also just allowed to play your Ponder Brainstorm on turn 1 before your opponent can even cast Orcish Bowmasters. Like, there's play to it. There are patterns that exist.
There's also a very large number of decks where Orcish Bowmasters is basically raise the alarm, because just drawing a card is not something that you particularly care about. So it's not like Orcish Bowmasters is just like omnipresent as an oppressive card. It is very good in a relatively large portion of the matchups in Legacy. But, you know, if you're playing Moonstompy, okay, maybe every couple of games, Orcish Bowmasters will stop me from looting with Fable of the Mirrorbreaker. Okay, that's a little annoying. It's a flash blocker that can kill my Rabblemaster. Okay, that's a little annoying. But, you know, it's no different from any other card that is trading one for one with me, or maybe slightly better than that.
Right, and when we're talking about those sorts of exchanges, Swords of Plowshares, Lightning Bolt, these are format staples. Fatal Push, and they all cost one. Spending two to get a conditional version of that, specifically if your Rabblemaster happens to be in the red zone. Like, you could just not attack with Rabblemaster if you smell like that's the thing. Just leave it back. And that's like leaving up that two mana is such a tell. Like, thinking out back to other cards that were problems, Oko. I still believe that Oko mirror gameplay was extremely fun and satisfying. It was not fun and satisfying that Oko completely invalidated anything else from happening in that format. When I have an Oko and you have an Oko, and there's some number of 3/3s in play, and we have to really get in there and do combat math and count permanents and figure out who's actually ahead here while keeping track of, like, you can't play anything too good because Oko can trade a food for it. And then, like I thought that gameplay was really good. However, it ruined the format around it. I think that Orcish Bowmaster versus Orcish Bowmaster gameplay is really good. Basically, every deck that Oko completely invalidated obliterates Bowmasters. Like, it's the same set of decks, right, Phil? That's your shit. You're the one who couldn't play Magic with Oko around, and now you're the one thriving with your Ancient Tomb decks versus the Bowmaster metagame.
I played a Legacy FNM Friday night where I did exactly what you were talking about. My blue-black X opponent, just 2-mana pass. I had Rabblemaster on board. I attacked with 2 Goblin tokens, and they just like looked at me, sighed, and pinged a token and blocked a token with the orc, as like they were clearly hoping to get the Rabblemaster.
A piece of feedback that we received on the previous episode as well was, is it possible that the three of us are just out of touch with the average Legacy player?
I don't know. I spent my Friday night playing Legacy with people who rarely played Legacy. Like, I played a proxy friendly FNM with a bunch of people who were cutting out decks beforehand, hadn't played a lot of Legacy. Like, I was teaching them heuristics. Like, I taught someone the don't play Tundra if you can play Island heuristic as they got Blood Mooned out of the game on turn one. And I feel like I play enough casual decks of non-tournament caliber that I feel like I have a pretty good feel for what the average Legacy player is doing. But, you know, you're welcome to tell me that I'm wrong.
Yeah, like, I'm open to reasonable criticism at all times on all subjects, and I like to think of myself as a reflective person with the ability to think and change information or change how I feel when information is presented. So being told that we're out of touch, obviously we play more Legacy than basically anyone. There's probably some moto grinder somewhere who gets more leagues than maybe me or Phil in a week, not more than Bryant because he's a psycho. Just playing leagues off camera like a maniac. All the Magic I play is recorded or it's at a tournament. I play zero leagues, like, for fun. I just don't have time for that. But I do play a lot of Legacy and a lot of different decks. And I have been reflecting on the possibility that we are, like, is it possible to be so right that you're actually wrong about something? If the person who shows up to play Legacy once a month or once every quarter doesn't come back the next month or the next quarter because of Bowmaster, does it matter if those play patterns are actually fine in reality, if that person's reality is affecting tournament attendance and the willingness of TOs to run tournaments again? Like, that is a concern that I have. There's this thing that my my dad used to do that would drive me nuts, where if he thought he was right about something, he would just be insufferable about it. And in my head, I started calling that he's correct, but he's not right. Like if you're hurting the people around you or like making people feel bad or just being an asshole, even though you are correct, you are still wrong. Like in the correct versus incorrect and right versus wrong calculations, like it's a grid to me that they're not synonyms. I was trying to consider, am I correct but wrong here? I don't know. Like, obviously, my perspective is the perspective I have, and I'm doing my best to weigh that versus, you know, the perspective that I hear from other people. But also, you know, SCG Philly blew the doors off. That event was huge. It was like the Sunday 5K, and it was almost as big as the Saturday Modern 10K. This event was off the chain. The Buffalo Chicken Legacy event that I played last weekend was sold out. That LGS was packed, and like one or two people didn't show up who prepaid, and they were like, who's here from the waiting list? Like, that's also a reality state of Legacy. So if we're thinking about like, am I out of touch because I play too much Legacy? I don't know yes or no, but I would also flip that back and challenge the people saying that. Are you out of touch talking on the internet to people who agree with you instead of hobnobbing, rubbing elbows at the LGS, or actually grinding in the Legacy queues? Because those are three completely different experiences. They all might end up in a slightly different place on that thought.
I feel like in the really unhealthy eras of Legacy, many decks or maybe even many macro archetypes get completely invalidated. And I don't feel like that has happened with Bowmasters and with Grief. I feel like adaptation has been required. You don't have to put the deck on the shelf and just box it for a year. You know, if you're still trying to force something like Glimpse of Nature Elves, like you have not tried to adapt, you know, Reclaimer Elves exists. But I feel like most decks can adapt. Sorry, Death and Taxes, looks like you're struggling right now. I salute the 2% of the pilots in the metagame who are trying to stick that one out. Good luck.
I tweeted something about this yesterday. If you look back at 2 months ago, maybe 2.5 months ago at this point, we were in an Ancient Tomb metagame. Phil was super happy. He's like, ooh, look at me. The Initiative's the top deck. Goblins is the top deck. Moonstompy's all the stuff. Phil was having the time of his life. And then a couple weeks later, Brian and his Bug Beans deck, top of the food chain. Grixis Delver took a weekend top. And now we're seeing Dimir Scaminator. And I guess my point here is that, are we going to see another cycle in the metagame where maybe Dimir Scaminator falls a couple pegs? Is it possible that this deck is just the flavor of 2 weeks? It's been 2 weeks since we recorded the last episode, and at that point we thought Legacy was in another golden era. And since then, we've had a number of people be like, the Age of the Orc is over, it needs to be banned. And it just feels like a lot of hyperbole to me that all of a sudden we're in this metagame that's insufferable, where 2 weeks ago it was great. And I don't know if it's actually that bad. I would hope that the people in charge just ride the wave a little bit and see if maybe the format will correct itself. Because I don't think that this Dimir Scaminator deck is so oppressive that nothing else can compete.
I'm looking at the metagame right now, according to Goldfish reporting. The top three decks are Rescaminator, Saltai Beans, Grixis Delver. Those are three Wasteland Days Bowmaster decks. Is that because the Wasteland Days Bowmaster shell is solved and broken? Or is it because last week's decks are soft to that combination of things? And will we see movement that rotates that back to the second thing? And then Ancient Tomb meets the first thing. I think it is, a lot's happened in 2 weeks. Last episode, we were talking about how cool it is that this Rescaminator deck, all the cards have been legal this whole time and it just emerged. And now we're like, oh, geez, this stupid deck. I'm sick of this. We're going to talk about Grief for the rest of this episode and we can get into this point more. But the fact that this Bowmaster Days Wasteland package is the current top three decks of the format now might be a response to last week rather than a response to what is correct in a vacuum.
I would like to give a theory that I have here. And if you're someone trying to break the week-to-week metagame, there's an observation that I have. The Rescaminator deck is painfully low on removal. So a lot of lists have one Brazen Borrower, four Orcish Bowmasters, and some number of Whale of the Forgotten, and that number fluctuates between 0 and 3. It's actually incredibly low. So if you're someone trying to attack this Rescaminator deck, One of the best ways you can do it is just with creatures with toughness larger than 2, mono red prison, goblins, and also Merit Lodge. I think Merit Lodge decks are actually primed to come back, and I think that those three decks are really good against Reanimator, Rescaminator, whatever you would like to call it. Just basically, if you can go wide, I don't know if Rescaminator is going to be able to beat you if you can manage an Atraxa.
Yeah, I just had a coaching session earlier today with someone who was playing Cephalid Breakfast, and they were playing against Rescaminator, and they were one of these people who has some experience in Legacy, but not deep in the trenches of the last month. They held back their Nomad Encore on turn 1, and I was like, whoa, you should have played that out. And they're like, really? It's a Dimir deck. Yeah, but they don't have removal. And that blew their mind. And then their Nomad got griefed immediately because they didn't play it out. That just loops back to understanding the play pattern and what's actually about. Are we ready to talk about if we think this deck is actually unhealthy, though? Are we ready to move into phase 2 of this conversation?
Yeah, sure.
Let's bridge the gap by reading what Wizards of the Coast just said about Legacy on March 11th. There was a ban list update to formats. Legacy was no changes, but they did write a paragraph, and they said, Orcish Bowmasters has crept into many of the macro strategies, featuring in Delver of Secrets variants, Sultai Control, and Reanimator. While the play rate of Orcish Bowmasters isn't quite the level of staples like Brainstorm, Ponder, and Force of Will, it is something we're keeping an eye on. For the time being, we're happy with the fact that many different decks can win at the top levels of Legacy. That's what they said about Legacy, and Orcish Bowmaster was the card that they said out loud they have eyes on. But that's not what we, obviously, like, we just, you know, spent a second episode in a row talking about Bowmaster. What card do we have our eyes on?
We've been looking at Grief. And this is a card that we've talked about a decent amount on the podcast. Feel free to jump back to episode 106 in Grief's Shadow, where we kind of deep dive Grief for a first time as Death's Shadow kind of started coming back into prominence.
Right. And we did a whole episode on Grief already. We did this 6 months ago, back in September. Keep that in mind as we move forward. This is not new. It's not like this card was just found. It's not like any of these interactions were just found. They're back at the top of the conversation chart.
So Grief is sort of interesting because while Force of Will is a reactive card, Grief is a proactive card. With Force of Will, like, you're waiting until your opponent puts something on the stack and then you respond to that. But you have more agency in choosing when you get to Grief. And Grief dodges some stuff. You know, Grief doesn't care about your Cavernous Souls. Grief does not care about your defense grid.
Right. These past 2 weekends, I played against a lot of defense grids. I had to defeat Tony Scapponi in my win and in at SCG Con. He was playing Epic Gamble, which has a bunch of defense grids. I had to play against 2 different Mystic Forge Karn Stompy builds at Buffalo Chicken through the Swiss to make that top 8. I've played against a lot of defense grids in the last 2 weeks, and the old combo player on the play Ancient Tomb defense grid go strat that would have put chills into my spine in other decks, I just Grief reanimate Grief. They're actually down 3 cards now because they cast the stupid defense grid that I don't care about, and they use Ancient Tomb to do it, so they're under the gun. Grief's attacking for 3, and your mana source costs 2 every time you use it, and you have no cards in your hand. It's just a very different type of calculation and what you need to think about, what you need to worry about.
Let's say you're a Legacy boomer and you've been playing for a very long time and you like to tell the people at your LGS how long you've been playing. You probably remember a card named Unmask that's been in Reanimator strategies for what seems like forever. How is Grief that different from Unmask? At least with Unmask, you can target yourself and then you can reanimate your Griselbrand and blah, 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 blah. Well, Grief is a little bit different, because you have the ability in these decks to reanimate creatures. And like Brian has been doing the last few weeks, when you reanimate a Grief, you now get your opponent's 2 best cards. With Unmask, if you just exile a card to discard one of their cards with no other upside, you are card negative, which is a huge difference. And I think when you're talking about Grief, it's not just always, oh, I pitched a card and discarded one of their cards, so I'm card negative. I think if you're only looking at it in that vacuum, you're sort of doing yourself a disservice. But also, when you look at the Legacy ban list, there's already a card there that gets to look at your opponent's hand for free. And that card is banned. We're talking about Gitaxian Probe here. And after the last episode, I had someone come up to me at SCG Con Philly, and they're like, Bryant, you really think that after your last episode that Grief and Orcish Bowmasters are fine? And I was like, yeah, but they're like, Gitaxian Probe is banned. Grief is just the second coming of that. And I've been thinking about that a lot and the power of free information. And I do understand that Grief is card negative, but in all of the shells that it sees play in, there's also reanimate, animate dead, stuff like that. And the power of free information is very high. There's a reason that you can only play Gitaxian Probe in Vintage at this point, or Casual Commander, whatever. And I think that maybe Wizards made a mistake with Grief, with it being proactive and the power of reinformation.
Yeah, I think that the comparison to Gitaxian Probe is dangerously close to comparing Mental Misstep to Orcish Bowmaster. Like, we already talked about that in this episode as not an actual apt comparison. Like, Gitaxian Probe is as close to free as a Magic card could reasonably be. It even replaces itself. Grief costs you two cards and you take one. So there is some deck building requirement to then break that, because if you pitch a card to Grief, take a card, you're down two cards, your opponent's down one, then you cast Reanimate, that's your third card, Grief comes into play, which is now a physical card that your opponent's going to have to deal with, and you've discarded two cards, and you have a creature left over. That is a 3-for-3 at the end of the day. However, you have taken their two best cards to fight that situation, so you're ahead at the jump off of the 3-for-3 that you have now proposed that we play this game around. It's like a lopsided 3-for-3. In a situation where 3 does not equal 3, basically, you've created in this little math warp. I don't think it's Gitaxian Probe, but I do obviously agree that being able to get perfect information at no mana investment, and in this case, interact with that information, is a big deal. I've had a play pattern that I've realized, because I was not a Grief gamer before the last 2 weekends, and I had to kind of figure out on my own, like, if I have Grief and Reanimate in my opening hand with a Ponder, but no other black card, at first, like, my knee jerk is like, I don't really want to pitch Reanimate to this. And then I realize I don't have to. I can just Ponder into any black card, pitch that, and then Reanimate next turn, because it's free. There's no mana. And that's a really powerful thing to be able to check first or select first and then check. And you could just do it in whatever order you want.
One thing that's been sort of interesting to me is like the delta for like how good versus how bad Grief can be is incredibly high. So like, for example, if your opponent mulligans to 5 and then you Grief them and you take their two only relevant cards, you have created a non-game. However, like when you mulligan to 5 and like you end up keeping like a Grief in there that you can't immediately reanimate, like that card feels quite bad in many cases. So like it is a card that has an incredibly high ceiling of like, I almost immediately win the game, but also a pretty terrible floor.
Right. And the power here is that Grief protects itself on the way in, both from removal and from graveyard hate, because you get control over what order the triggers go on the stack. You can decide whether to sacrifice Grief first or take a card from your opponent's hand first if you evoke it. And if you stack it so it takes the card first, you could take the Surgical or take the Fairy Macabre or the Endurance, and then the coast is clear for the second round. And if your opponent suspects you might be reanimating, they then have to decide, are they going to Swords to Plowshares Grief in response to its take a card trigger, where you then get to take a card anyway, and maybe you weren't even going to reanimate that, or maybe you have another one. Really miserable the way that it protects itself, because a 3-2 menace is not that big of a deal. This format is built around evasive 3-power creatures. We know how to deal with those. We got Delvers, DRCs, Dothi Voidwalkers, True Name Nemesis. We've got these things floating
Nibble
around.
Nibble Mongoose, throwback.
That doesn't have evasion, but it is hard to kill. We have a history of dealing with 3-power evasive creatures, but Delver doesn't Thoughtseize you twice on its way in, is the difference.
Yeah, and when you Grief, reanimate Grief, and then you have like a Daze or Force of Will beyond that to back it up, that starts to feel a little oppressive. That sometimes is like, okay, my decisions did not matter in any capacity in this game. But a lot of times those situations are like the absolute ideals lining up.
We talked about this a little bit in our previous episode, but this blue-black Riskaminator deck, it's really difficult to attack because they can just pivot into a plan that doesn't use their graveyard at all. And if Surgical Extraction and Fairy Macabre aren't effective, are you boarding in Leyline of the Void and mulliganing for it against a deck that might have just boarded out all the reanimates for things like Dothy Voidwalker or True Name Nemesis or Murktide Regent or whatever, making their deck significantly worse while you just completely have a perfect juke?
Yeah, and like similarly, how do you feel about Fairy and Surgical? If your opponent just goes and griefs you, you lose the Fairy or Surgical before you get to take out the relevant card, and then they'll reanimate it and take your, you know, real best card beyond that.
Yeah, and I mean, I have this recent example, I'm going to bring it up again, of that coaching client who I think is going to listen to this episode. Shout out, by the way, I use these examples to teach, not to roast you. I think you know that. But that same match where they were playing Cephalid Breakfast versus Rescaminator, they got clowned by an Archon of Cruelty in game one. And then we were reviewing video, so it wasn't live. I couldn't stop them from doing anything. And what they did was immediately brought in their Force of Negations on top of their Force of Wills. And my thought looking at their sideboard was, I'm trying to shave Force of Wills and get these Surgicals and Flusterstorms in the deck and all my Swords to Plowshares and maybe even my Prismatic Endings that are in the sideboard. I want to be Esper midrange versus this deck, because you're not going to win a game where you force twice either. That's the same as getting griefed and reanimated grief. You're down two cards. We were talking through this and I was like, okay, let's watch this game two, see what happens. I bet you're going to die to a Dothy Voidwalker with a Force of Negation in your hand. Guess what? That's exactly what the game state looked like when he finally conceded. This juke is really powerful, but also knowledge is power. It's half the battle, I've heard. And knowing that they could juke means that you're not sitting on a handful of Fairy Macabres and Force of Negations as they drop Dothy Voidwalkers and Murktide Regents on you in game two.
And for those of you who aren't super dialed into what this pivot plan is that we're talking about, it's something on the order of like three or four Dothy Voidwalker, two Murktide Regent, and then maybe a couple supplementary creatures beyond that, like a fourth Orcish Bowmasters or maybe a Brazen Borrower or two.
Right. And what comes out is the monsters, the Entombs, and some of the Animate Deads.
Do we think that with the rotating format, that maybe it's possible that the Legacy community isn't aware of this sideboard juke, or they're not familiar enough with this blue-black Rescaminator deck, and they're saying this is Reanimator. And that's part of the reason why this package has become so successful, is the community at large isn't ready for the juke, or do you think the juke is so powerful that it just doesn't matter? Because so far we've seen everything cycle, and we're about at the point where things would cycle over the last couple months. Do you think that it's going to take longer for people to catch on to this plan, or do you think the community is aware of this and it's just too powerful as a sideboard option?
I think it is both. I think that if you know about the juke, you can get ahead of it and sideboard appropriately, and then it's on your opponent to juke you back and just still be a reanimator deck in game one, and you don't have all your Force Negations in. So, you know, mileage may vary. That is a strength of the juke, that it might actually be that good. But the wins are so free if they don't know, which is just a huge part of this transformation. It's kind of like sometimes I'm thinking about historical jukes where Bant Tempo Threshold jukes into Oath of Druids after a sideboard. They cut all their little tempo creatures, put in some big O's and some Oath of Druids to beat aggro mirrors. Like, that's a thing where if you lean wrong, if you guess wrong and they know, you've probably just obliterated your deck's ability to play the game. But this one, they just turn into a different Legacy deck. Dimir Scam, that was a tier one deck for a long time, and they just turn into that. So even if you know about the juke, you still have to beat a tier one Legacy deck. But if you don't know about the juke, you've already lost.
Yeah. So something that's kind of interesting here is that the blue-black tempo reanimator deck is pretty good at playing around common Legacy cards. So for example, Chalice on one is something that is pretty respectable against a lot of blue decks. You know, Chalice isn't as great as it used to be, but it's still good. Chalice on one does not stop Animate Dead. So around a Chalice on one, you can do something like Swamp Cycle a Troll of Khazad-dûm and then reanimate it. And it doesn't stop the sideboard pivot cards like the Dothy Voidwalkers and Murktide Regents. It doesn't stop you from going and casting a Troll of Khazad-dûm if the game drags on. And similarly, Swamp Cycle on Troll of Khazad-dûm also means that your Blood Moon and Magus of the Moons aren't guaranteed to lock your opponent out of black. And as soon as, like, Animate Dead is back on the table or Reanimate is back on the table, your early game prison piece isn't really going to go the distance anymore.
Right, and I want to talk about Grief as a funnel for cards that wouldn't work otherwise, which I did not have in the notes, but you giving that line just made me think of it. A bunch of times over these last 2 weeks playing this deck, an opponent has pregame put in Leyline of the Void, and I kept a hand with the plan of Grief scamming them, like pitch some black card, reanimate Grief. They start on a Leyline, and I'm like, okay, pitch the reanimate to Grief, and now take a card from your six-card hand because you put a Leyline into play. You're still down two cards to play the game with. I don't get to reanimate my Grief, but now I have this blank of a cardboard that I don't even mind pitching to get this peek and the information on turn one, or perhaps even your turn zero.
So let's say you're the average Legacy player, and you're thinking, well, if they have the Cyborg Juke and Grief and Orcish Bowmasters, like, how am I possibly supposed to beat this? Like, what is my plan moving forward?
I conceptually like white removal a lot. White removal removes your Atraxas, your Archon of Cruelties, your Murktide Regents, your Douthi Voidwalkers, your Bowmasters. Like, the Swords to Plowshares type universal removal cards seem conceptually well positioned against this deck.
Agreed. The matches that I find myself really struggling in are ones that can catch up with a top deck. Because we talked about Grief's ability to shred your hand, but that's the problem, the Thoughtseize bug, right? You take a card that they draw it right away. If you Grief their hand, reanimate some monster, and then they flip a Terminus, you've probably lost. Even just scamming a Grief, getting their hand down to just lands, they have now 7 turns to draw a Swords to Plowshares before that Grief, the pressure's off, and you got to do something else. After that, you got to follow that up. You got to protect the Grief or have another thing. Uro, Titan of Nature's Wrath. Remember that one? That card is pretty good against the entire fair axis of this deck. It mitigates Grief's damage on attack. And Uro can outmuscle Bowmaster. We were talking about that before. Like, you're not attacking into a Hull Breacher or a Leovold. It's just like, I gain 2. I gain 2. And your creature's slightly bigger, and then you have to chump block my 6/6 with that creature you just made. It doesn't matter how big it is. Uro's really good against these style of decks. I recorded a league that went up a few days ago at the time of the release of this pod on my channel with this deck, and, you know, spoilers, it was rough. I narrowly fended off going 0-5. I went 1-4, and I only won the last match of the league. I was not losing to insane things. Like, it wasn't mono black helm with main deck graveyard hate. It was like, I played against Grixis Delver, who main decked 1 Nihil Spellbomb, and they just put that into play on turn 1, and it stuffed my entire explodey part of my deck, and then you just have to play a worse Delver deck than their Delver deck if they just have a Nihil Spellbomb sitting in their main deck that they could cast sometimes. I lost to a bunch of white decks where I do my thing, and then they just answer it with some white removal spell, and then I'm behind. You can beat this deck on normal axes, and with kind of small steps towards addressing it. Soulguide Lantern we've seen in main decks, definitely in Urza Saga decks. Any Saga deck should be able to have some main deck bobble of some sort that hits the graveyard. And usually if you can slow down the first big reanimate, this deck is playing from behind, and it's very bad at doing that.
So conceptually, when you sit down for a tournament match, what do you not want to get paired against while you are playing this deck? You know, what's the one deck when they like reveal their hand and you're like, oh shit, it's this one?
That's the rub, isn't it, about the whole topic of this episode? If they're revealing their hand to me, I care very little about what they are. And if I see that the cards I could take are Uro and some cantrip, I know that I'm going to have to slog through this and the Grief's not going to solo. There's also the entire universe of draws. 60% of the time, Grief will not be in your opening hand. Cascading percentages from there. I'm not a math person. Someone else could do it. But I believe, Bryant, tell me, force check math. You're 40% to have a 4 of in your opening 7, right?
That is correct. Yes.
Let's add and a black card and a reanimate and a land to cast the animate. So there's already like sub 40% of the time that you're going to fully scam somebody. When you aren't checking their hand for interaction, you're now worried about a lot. If you don't get that free peek, especially that second wave of free peek, and now you're actually just trying to play Entomb Reanimate and back it up with Force of Will, that's a shitty deck. We've sent that deck packing many times over the years. Blue-Black Reanimator, it was completely replaced for a long time. The value of this deck is that it's not that deck. It's in fact Dimir Scam, but has the high roll ability to play like that deck sometimes. I am worried anytime I can't grief my opponent, honestly. I have to actually navigate it and sweat a little bit, like hope this Force of Will holds up, hope they don't have this, hope they don't have two pieces of interaction. The non-grief games are actually pretty interesting, I would say.
Gentlemen, I am looking over the Beanstalk decks that have white in them to get an idea of what other people are doing to be successful against this Riskaminator deck. And there's two cards that come to mind. The first one is ultra spicy, and the second one is pretty typical, but also a little bit spicy. So the first one, a main deck copy of Groundseal.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. If you're unfamiliar, Groundseal is a 2-mana green enchantment that was originally printed in Odyssey, and I believe again in, like, Magic 20 or something. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card. So, like, up the Beanstalk, it's 1 and a green, you draw a card, it's beautiful. However, with Groundseal, cards in graveyards can't be the target of spells or abilities, which means Brian over there can't cast Reanimate on Grief. Not allowed to. Can't happen. But you could still unearth your Uro. Yeah, Escape. My bad. Unearth, Escape is the same.
Also, they can't surgical your Uro.
Or reanimate your creatures that they discard with grief, that sort of thing.
Right, and this conversation, the main deck Nile Spellbomb in Grixis Delver, the main deck Ground Seal in Bant Beans, this is a conversation that we've had before. It's usually about Pyroblast, where is main deck Pyroblast a sign of an inbred unhealthy metagame, or is that enterprising deck builder solving a problem? In this case, I'm not sure yet. There is a large swath of graveyard hate that's relatively cheap, and a lot of it cantrips if it's bad. Like Soulguide Lantern cantrips if you don't need to hit their graveyard. Nile Spellbomb cantrips when you do hit their graveyard. Groundsteel cantrips on the way in. There's a lot of low-hanging fruit where if you just want like one or two slots in your deck to respect that this thing is out there without just spewing off when it's bad, there's options, and I am still deciding for myself. Like, we're just people playing Legacy. I don't have a fully formed opinion on this yet. It's still pretty new. Is this a main deck Pyro? Well, it is a main deck Pyroblast situation. Is it unhealthy? Is it toxic? Or is it just a problem being solved?
Well, the next card is a little bit more typical, Brian, and it's Dress Down. When you look at the Riskaminator deck, they typically, at least in my experience, get Atraxa before they grab Archon of Cruelty, but Dress Down hits both. Dress Down also stops Grief, however, it would have to be after the second turn, I understand that, we're once again in a situation, like our cantrips with Orcish Bowmasters, where your opponent has to have the mana to play Dress Down, but it stops Grief, it stops Bowmasters. Really, the only card that Dress Down doesn't stop in Riskaminator is the Troll of Khazad-dûm. And I think that's acceptable that they have a single creature that Dress Down doesn't hose, or stop or prevent for a turn. And I think
you can chump it. Like, it does. It's not that Troll has no abilities. It's functionally unblockable versus most decks where, you know, Dress Down, chump for a turn could be the draw step you need to find the removal spell. So it's even useful there.
Exactly. And I'm just saying that we have ways that are in a lot of main decks already. And I mean, Dress Down has other applications against the Initiative or Doomsday, you know, stuff like that. It's not like Dress Down is a bad card. There's cards that we have access to that could be, you know, cards that were your 62nd card that now become your 60th.
Clarifying with Dress Down, this is something that has been there all along that happens to be good against these, not something that is being added in, right?
It comes in and out. Dress Down, sometimes there's like one or two in a sideboard. Sometimes there's one or two in a main deck. It's one of those cards that just moves around. Generally, the more Thassa's Oracles and Urza's Sagas are in the metagame, the more main deck Dress Downs you're going to see. But maybe Atraxa is something we need to think about as on our list of things that are high in the metagame to necessitate a main deck Dress Down or two. Also a cantrip, by the way, another big upside of all of these other cards we've mentioned. If it's bad, you just cast it and draw your card and move on. Now you have a different card.
So as kind of a side effect here, if you are playing a deck that happens to have main deck graveyard hate as a portion of it, you might be eating good in this metagame. So there's this like mono black, like scam aggro deck list that has like main deck Douthi, Voidwalkers, and still has the Grief Reanimator scam package and Wasteland and Stalactite Stalker and all that stuff. That is a deck that has existed in the wake of the Lord of the Rings set. And it's picked up some other things like Exsanguinator Cavalry since then. Some people have like came to me being like, hey, is it time for Mono Black Helm to come back because you have the main deck ley lines? Like, those are decks worth exploring if those decks are in your wheelhouse already.
My top 8 opponent at the Buffalo Chicken Legacy Tournament last weekend was Mono Black Helm. I was not sitting near him all day. I didn't know. And then just, you know, top 8, I'm on the play. And he's like, I have a pregame. And I was like, oh, shit. My plan was actually to scam that person. And that was just a cool way to come at the metagame. Also, Adam Wasburn Moses, who is a Magic grinder from the Midwest, he was there doing commentary at the Buffalo Chicken. And he was qualified for the Legacy Showcase Challenge the next day. And he showed me his list. He's like, I just can't lose with Mono Black right now. He could play anything. He has the skill set. But he was just very close to locking Mono Black Helm as well. That's out there. And it's not super embarrassing. That deck was fine before Reanimator was at the top of the metagame.
So as we reach the end of the episode, there's just one question. Smash or pass? You've got the ban button in your hand. Is it time to take out Grief? Is it too much for the format? What's your soundbite?
I would currently say pass. I think that Legacy needs a little bit more time. And I'm not saying that I don't want changes or anything like that. I'm saying just let's see what Legacy looks like in a month. And if, you know, in a month, if things have gotten worse, maybe we'll reconsider. But I think right now, there's a lot of people out there crying wolf. And at SCGCon, I did have some people coming up to me going like, well, Bowmasters completely invalidates this. And they would then go on to describe how it beats their deck. It's like, well, you seem a little bit biased here. Like, Orcish Bowmasters killing your Goblin Lackey. Yeah, I get it. I wouldn't want my Goblin Lackey shot with a removal spell either. Or, you know, Orcish Bowmasters is really good against my Enchantress deck. All my deck does is draw cards and not remove creatures. Yeah, I understand not liking Orcish Bowmasters, but with Grief and Bowmasters, and I personally think Grief, if anything had to go, would be the card and not Bowmasters. I think Bowmasters is truly healthy for Legacy, and we need more cards that punish cantrips, not less.
My take is very close to Brian's. I would also pass on banning Grief today. Talk to me again in 3 weeks. We'll see how I feel. But I do think that Grief is the most bannable card in Legacy right now, even though I would not press the button just yet.
Phil, how about you?
I would not touch Orcish Bowmasters. I think that is a great card with wonderful play patterns for the format. I love that there is a budget mono black deck that doesn't like play dual lands or anything that is very competitive. I like that a lot, and Bowmasters has been a huge part of enabling that. I would pass on banning Grief for the moment, but I've sent my hey message. I'm comfortable flirting with the idea, but I need a few more weeks to see how I feel. I need more data.
So you're in Grief's DMs right now, just feeling her out?
I am in Grief's DMs, feeling her out, absolutely.